Let's go, let's go, let's go. Tempo in and out of the huddle. I want to go odd. 5-51 mirror.
This is Patriots Playbook.
Go stack guts combat. Odd. 51 mirror.
Patriots Playbook. Breaking down last Sunday's game.
They're looking for man coverage in the zone. They didn't have anybody to throw to. Just stay outside on the 7 route.
Next Sunday's game.
Be ready for the grapes check, too, okay? Because we'll get the bunch on 3rd and short.
Even 51 grapes. Even 51 grapes.
And the rest of the NFL season.
Yeah, go ahead and hit it in there because the backers are going to fast read over the top.
And some of the fun stuff in between. Now, here's John Rook on Patriots Playbook.
Come on, let's go, let's go.
The headline on ESPN.com says, Favre willing to give it a try. You think? Welcome everybody inside the playbook for a Wednesday.
I wish you'd warned me about that, John. I would have taken a seat. You threw me for a loop there. My God, he actually wants to try to play?
Shocking. I know it's shocking. Of course, that's PFW's Eric Scalavino. Was there ever any doubt? I said the best bet of the week is that Favre would play. Of course he is. And in fact, it actually benefits the Patriots, I think, if he doesn't play, to be quite honest with you.
The Patriots if he does play.
I mean, yes, if he does play. It benefits the Vikings if he doesn't, because I think the Patriots would have a little bit more difficult game plan for whomever, especially if it's
Tavares Jackson, probably.
And his mobility alone, might cause the Patriots some troubles, whereas, Favre is still going to be a sitting duck back there. So, who knows?
And it's Favre. You know he's good for at least 2 interceptions.
Well,
they'll
there you
probably
go.
Come at key times. So.
Yeah. Absolutely. So, Brett Favre willing to give it a try. Really?
Of course, he's also capable of throwing for 400 to Randy Moss, but that's...
Well, yeah, and you know what? I think we would be all stunned if we didn't see him go over the top to Moss within that first series of downs that they have the ball on Sunday, huh? I mean, he's got to test it. You know that he knows that Moss wants to catch a deep one on the Patriots secondary, which, of course, as we know, is young and, shall we say, still matriculating.
Well,
is that a good firm? Good term there?
Sure. It's not just the secondary, though, that concerns me. It's that we've gotten to the point where we just completely discount the possibility of getting any pressure on the opposing quarterback.
Right.
Because if we had that, even the slightest possibility of that, that could completely nullify whatever Favre wants to do with going long to Moss or short to Shanko or Harvin or whatever. We just totally assume now, and I think with good reason, that there's not going to be any pressure brought, which is sad.
Well, the fact that Favre says he's going to give it a try leads me to my question of the day.
Yeah.
So here we go. Webradio@patriots.com is the email address, of course, how you reach us. Ace Ticket Hotline, 508-543-7482. Facebook page is open and ready to roll as well if you want to submit via Facebook page wall or chat. If you could tell Brett Favre or ask him one thing, what would it be?
When are you going away for good?
See, now, I have a feeling that we're going to that would probably end up dominating. But in all seriousness,
I'm trying. I am serious.
Okay, that's fine then. So you would ask him when he's going to go
him,
away.
I am so sick of him and his circus that accompanies him, the whole prima donna act. I've been sick of it for years, and I just can't wait for the day when I never have to utter the name Brett Favre ever again.
Now,
ball
don't feel
good. That ball there has silicone on it.
Goober.
I hadn't heard that one. Here's the thing. You say that, and yet the guy's going to go down as a Hall of Fame quarterback, and probably within a few years after we've forgotten a lot of this crap that's going on now, which we will. History says we will, so we will. He'll go down and probably be remembered as one of the gutsier quarterbacks. Dare I say he'll be remembered in the same breath, if not even a little bit more so, than Dan Marino?
Different, because he actually has a ring. Marino doesn't.
Well, then, again, I'm taking into consideration the end of his career is, let's say, it's just not been a public relations piece of perfection.
He's definitely – he has tarnished his reputation.
Which is
indelibly.
Which is why I asked the question, if you had one question you could ask Brett Favre, what would you ask him? Or if you had one thing to say to Brett Favre, what would you say to him? because I frankly believe that there will be some who would say, you know, why have you done this to your reputation? Mm-hmm. Why have you done this to career?
Yeah.
What ticks inside you to make you want to keep coming back when it's clear that nobody, including your own coaches and teammates, want you, and yet you keep throwing yourself on them? Some might even want to ask him, how do you do it? How do you impose your will on other people like he apparently can and does on a daily basis?
Well, the first answer is Brad Childress is a pushover of the highest magnitude.
But Childress threw him under the bus this week.
Yeah, but Childress is the one who begged and got on his knees to bring him back for another year.
Well, then maybe we should ask Brad Childress, why are you an idiot? I mean, you know, why do you do this? And why do you throw him under the bus? I mean, you know, when is enough enough here?
I'd like to ask Ziggy Wolf when he's going to pull the plug on this whole.
Well, that also could be another question. But I'd be interested to hear what folks have to say if they had one thing to say or one thing to ask Brett Favre, what would it be? Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the Ace Ticket Hotline, and Facebook us as well. Coming up with the program in about 20 minutes, Paul Allen, the radio voice of the Vikings, will join us. We'll ask him. We'll ask him that question. You know, hey, you get a chance to talk to Brett. What do you ask him? And maybe we'll ask him when he thinks Ziggy Wolf is going to the owner of the Vikings, for those that might not know. You know, when he thinks that this whole experiment might technically end. I mean, who knows? But he obviously has been somewhat critical of Favre's play and his play-by-play. Seems to be sort of the new breed of play-by-play announcer, guys that throw in a little commentary along with, you know, just calling the X's and the O's out there, which I don't necessarily mind. So, you know, we'll get into some of that. And then hour number two of the program, Andy Kent, our AFC East blogger from AOL Fan House, he's going to join us, and we'll catch up on all things Patriots and Jets as well, in light of the fact that we've got this game with the Vikings coming up on Sunday. So do we have a practice report that we can talk about in particular? Any sign of Eugene? Eugene, here we go. Patrick Chung.
You're not the first person to make that mistake, John. You won't be the last. And
old habits.
You weren't the first one this week to make that mistake either.
Really? Who did it before me this week?
One of our colleagues from the Globe. I won't embarrass him out loud, but
he said Eugene Chung?
Yeah, but and Bill corrected him. It was a funny moment. It was
nice.
A very lighthearted moment. He's
nice.
He's,
well, that just shows you how old you are.
Yeah, that's what the reporter said too. It was funny. It was a good exchange.
I like it.
Yeah,
Patrick.
Matthew Slater, who I believe injured an ankle and left the game but returned Sunday, was not out there. Neither was Chung. Fred Taylor, Jared Page, who's been missing for the last couple of weeks with that calf. Mm-hmm. And Vince Wilfork, who we didn't see anything that happened to him in the game, and I think somebody may have spotted him in the locker room today. So it could be one of those non-injury related.
You think
things.
Just a sort of a day of needed rest and relaxation,
could
so
be.
To speak?
We'll find out in about 2 hours.
Two hours, right.
Report comes out, but right. I wouldn't panic just yet with that one. It was just a little surprising not to see him out there. So.
True.
Those five missing. They were in the bubble today because of the weather.
Okay.
But they also had shells and shorts on. So another Wednesday. I think this is the second or third in a row that they've gone light on a Wednesday where they normally go full pads.
Okay. Any idea, any clue, what's the scuttlebutt been about Pat Chung and his alleged leg injury? What have you heard others talking about?
Well, there was a report that was, I don't recall who actually first issued it. There was no attribution from what I saw or heard people talking about, but there was some media report that it was a 1 to 2 week deal.
Okay.
But I haven't heard confirmation. Bill hasn't, obviously, said one way or the other, and we just really have very limited information about that right now, even scuttlebutt information.
Yeah, I just it seems to me that the Patriots could probably do themselves a huge favor if perhaps they would, you know, be a little bit more forthcoming with some of the information. We know over the past several years this is their modus operandi. This is something that they don't normally do. And yet, you know, there's a lot of interest. The questions probably start if you just control it. If you learn to manage your own, you know, PR needs here and say what you feel needs to be said and then just move on. You know, then you don't get the needless, you know, questions. You know, I don't, mm-hmm. For the life of me, I can't figure out why that hasn't ever been, you know, discussed or
oh, maybe
why
it
they
has,
haven't gone
and it's
route.
Just been. You know, rejected in favor of what the practice is.
Yeah. Well, Mike Reese, his latest on ESPN Boston, on his blog there, says that, you know, basically what I'm sure you guys have talked about, he walked through the locker room today without a noticeable limp. Looks like he avoided serious long-range injury, but based on his absence from the start of practice, he might still be in jeopardy of missing some time.
Well, it's, and, well, it's funny that you – I mean, yes, but based on, when you base an opinion like that on just something you see in a 30-second window of opportunity – you could have made the same assessment about Fred Taylor's injury a few weeks ago, because he was seen several times walking through the locker room without any noticeable limp.
Yeah.
But his injury, the toe, the turf toe thing, is, as any player who's had it will tell you, is pretty debilitating, even though it doesn't look like there's anything. I mean, if you try to run on that thing, that's when you get the problem. So, I want to take Mike at his word that that's what he saw, and you know, that was the impression that he got, and he may very well be right, but I just want to point out that there are times when you see players who look like there's nothing wrong and they're out for longer than, you know, a couple of days.
Yeah, that's true. Well, while Chung may have to work out his own issues, at least today we've been led to believe that there's a guy with a bad ankle, bad leg, maybe a wounded arm, who knows, that says he's going to make a go of it, or at least try to make a go of it on Sunday. And of course, we're speaking about Brett Favre, as we talked about to open up the program today. Paul Allen, longtime radio voice of the Minnesota Vikings on KFAN in Minneapolis, joins us here inside the playbook. Paul, it's John Rook and Eric Scalavino. How are you today, sir?
Hey, how you guys doing?
We're
good,
doing
Paul.
Great.
Thanks.
Let me first of all say, you have several fans here in New England for your radio calls.
Well, that's nice. You can always use one or two fans anywhere. I appreciate that, whoever they are.
You got us right here. We just introduced ourselves.
I appreciate that. That's really nice of you guys. It's you know, I've been doing it for 9 years. It's my first play-by-play job ever at any level. I auditioned for it and I won, and you know, given I didn't travel around the country or go to Syracuse or Northwestern like you're supposed to do to pick up anybody's style, I guess I kind of got a unique style, and it's not necessarily for everybody, but for those who do like it, I do appreciate it.
Well, I think the one thing that endeared many of us, you know, to you and your style of calling is your emotion, your raw emotion that showed certainly at the end of the NFC Championship game last year. It was unmistakable, and I think we all appreciated that, because, quite frankly, as an announcer myself, there are times when sometimes you just can't do that, and I wish I could do that more often. And frankly, I'm using you as an example. I may try to do that more often.
Well, I mean, you know, my situation's unique. You know, I have a horse racing background. I've been a racetrack announcer since 1993. I guess the track I call it now, Canterbury Park here in Minnesota, would be probably a notch below Suffolk, as Massachusetts would go. Mm-hmm. But so, therefore, you know, I look at it that way. But, you know, I'm compensated to do this job by Clear Channel Radio. And I do a radio show here from 9 to noon that started in 98, 3 years before I began play-by-play. So they knew what they were getting into when they signed on with me. And, you know, I guess the fact that I'm not a, quote, team employee, end quote, allows me a little more flexibility. But over 9 years, you know, we've had the same vice presidents around here. And, you know, if I did something that offended them or they felt was so off-putting, it compromised the integrity of the organization, you know, they'd probably say something to me, but, they know where my heart is. And if Brett Favre's throwing the ball right to Dwight Lowry or Desmond Bishop or Tracy Porter in the NFC title game, or if we get bumped out of the playoffs on the last play of the 2003 season, you know, they know that I'm going to feel that, and that professionally speaking, I'm going to hurt. And that's how it's going to come out on the radio, and you know, hopefully it speaks for a lot of fans.
Paul, question that we've asked our fans to kind of start the program off today, because we've got, you know, obviously a lot of fans around the NFL who listen in here, but, you know, a lot of them, the majority, are out of New England Patriots fans spread all over the planet, which we're very appreciative of the listenership and the following here. But I would, you know, the question I've asked them today is, if you had one thing you could ask or say to Brett Favre, what would it be? So I would ask you right now today, as of Wednesday of game week against the Patriots, what would you ask Brett if you had the chance here?
That's a terrific question. It wouldn't be something about the obvious off-the-field thing, because if I had that one opportunity, which even as the play-by-play guy, I really don't. Mm-hmm. I mean, you know, I probably had a combined one-hour conversation total over the whole year last year with Brett. and haven't talked to him much this year. You know, I think it probably would be how did he overcome some of the demons early in his career, and the art of sustaining, you know, the art of sustaining mentally and physically, and, you know, now at the tail end having to go from Green Bay to the Jets to the Vikings. I'd probably keep it there. I'd have a better answer if I had more time to think about it, but, you know, I think the art of sustaining really in any career kind of defines your legacy. And at 20 years, you know, he's being considered one of the greatest in the history of the game, even though this probably is his last year and it's not going too well right now. I'd probably focus on sustaining.
I'm at the other end of the spectrum, Paul. I want to know when he's going to leave for good. And I can't wait for that day to come.
What, for Brett to leave?
Yeah, I'm tired of him.
Well, I'll tell you what, the way he played last year, man, you know, I thought we were going to be able to recreate that this year, and then Mr. Belichick trades Moss to us, and you know, we thought that was going to work out a certain way, and it's been okay, not great to this moment. But the thing with Brett this year is he has the obvious interceptions, which, I mean, he's made some mistakes this year that have just absolutely killed us, and we just had one in the Green Bay Packers game, but The thing that is antithetical to anything Brett did last year is he's leaving touchdowns on the table, where when you go back and you watch these games, like that Jets game on Monday Night Football, I'm sure you guys watched, here the Jets are going up and down the field on us, but they can't do anything in the red zone, and Nick Folk kicks 5 field goals. And in watching that game back, he was so inaccurate on a couple of passes to Percy Harvin and 2 to Randy Moss. We should have scored 35 points in that game if he's anywhere close to who he was last year. So now you analyze exactly why the inaccuracy has taken place during the first 6 games of the season, and you think, okay, you got that Jen Sturger thing. How much is that weighing on him? You have the fact that he is 41. He battled elbow tendonitis. He missed training camp. Now he has the bad ankle, and he was without a field-stretching receiver until Moss got here. So there's just so much circulating around him right now. It's really, really tough to get your arms around it.
I guess it's got to be probably tough for him to concentrate with all of this stuff circling around him. And again, as you've already kind of alluded to here, a lot of this he is sort of self-inflicted. He's kind of brought it on himself.
Right.
But at the same time, I can't even imagine what it would be like to spend a day as Brett Favre. So kind of with that in mind here and knowing what his football personality is all about, put a percentage on his chances of playing this Sunday.
That's another excellent question, because early in the week, you know, when I was at the Brad Childress press conference after our loss to Green Bay, the way he described the ankle injury with a couple of fractures, a stress fracture and some word I've never heard of, and then the fact that his performance on the field hasn't been that good this year. In fact, you know, he has Brett has accounted for 14 turnovers, 10 interceptions, and 4 fumbles lost, and those turnovers have led to 51 points for the opposition. So it's not like he's single-handedly responsible for giving up a touchdown a game, but he's pretty close. Mm-hmm. So if you put all those things together, and then you add to the fact that DeVaris Jackson, you know, brings some mobility and he's completely healthy. Early in the week, I thought it was about 80% DeVaris would play. Hearing Brett's press conference today, snooping around a little bit, I'd say it's probably closer to 50-50. In fact, maybe even 60-40 Favre does play. And maybe the, you know, since we don't really understand all the medical terms involving these fractures and his ankle and everything, maybe it's not as bad as I think it is.
Paul, when Favre got there last year, was there a sense among, you know, Viking Nation that he was going to be able to do what he did last year and help lead you guys?
No, nobody saw that. What they did see with DeVaris Jackson, we were able to win the division with DeVaris Jackson playing almost half the season. And we lost in the first playoff game to Philadelphia. And, you know, DeVaris didn't look like he handled the pressure well at all. And that will happen with a lot of young quarterbacks. But DeVaris is a spectacular athlete. Handling pressure is a different deal. So when you get Brett, you know, you get him off a season where through the first 11 games before his arm blew out with that biceps injury, man, they were 8-3, and he might have been the league MVP. Then the biceps goes, and he was awful through the final 5 games of the season. So we get that guy, and he had the biceps fixed in the off season, so we knew it would be better, but we didn't know it was going to be 33-7, 25 TDs, and 2 picks at home. four against Dallas, where you just bury Dallas in the first playoff game, and then he was okay in the NFC title game. So we knew it would be better than what we had, but I think the way everybody looked at it was the Minnesota Vikings need a quarterback with all this talent around him to be able to handle playoff pressure, and Brett, for the most part, did that. You know, he threw that interception at the end of the NFC title game, man, but the whole game got thrown off kilter on two things. We caused a Reggie Bush fumble on a punt return right in front of halftime. Then on the next play, Adrian fumbled at the five, and the Saints got it.
Right.
So we had a chance to open up there, and then really in inexplicable fashion, out of a timeout late in the game, we had 12 men in the huddle. I mean, I was flabbergasted. Something like that could happen out of a timeout that late in that important of a game.
Mm-hmm.
And everything just became discombobulated after that. We lost Cedric Griffin on the first play of overtime. There was a horrible pass interference call on Ben Lieber in overtime. And then that was it. Now here we are now, man, at 2-4. And, you know, there's absolutely no way I saw this team at 2-4. Even if you had told me Brett was going to be a little slow to go, I mean, we choked away the Dolphins game with four turnovers and a defensive touchdown. Brett threw it right to Kyle Lowry on Monday Night Football against the Jets, threw it right to Desmond Bishop last week for a touchdown. Then the NFL comes out and says if we had challenged one play, it would have gone our way, and a Vasante Shenko touchdown should have counted, and the replay officials made a mistake. So we're facing stuff like that right now. And you know, while I was waiting for you guys to bring me on, you were talking about, I would assume, Patrick Chung and,
right,
you know, the close-to-the-vest, tight-lipped nature that makes up the New England Patriots and Bill Belichick and the media. And, you know, we're very much like that here, but it's interesting to note that guys in our position, you guys doing that radio show, me doing mine, you know, we always like it when players and coaches are loquacious and they're outspoken and they tell it like it is. But we had that situation after the Green Bay game where Brad Childress said, it's the worst officiated game I've ever seen, and Brett Favre did not play within our scheme. And if you listen to things nationally and locally, the head coach is just getting destroyed right now. So it kind of bugs me that you can't have it both ways. I mean, if you want them to tell it like it is, you have to embrace that and deal with it. Or just accept the way Belichick, Reed, Shanahan, Childress, and people like that do it.
Right. That's a great point, actually, because, frankly, from our perspective, I think Minnesota seems to be one of the more forthright teams that's out there. Just listen to what Brad Childress has had to say this week.
No, man. I'll tell you what. I don't know if he's having a little breakdown because of the pressure right now at 2-4 with the super talented team. I don't know if he and Brett have a chasm between them. I don't know what's going on right now, but for Brad Childress to come out after that game and say it was the worst officiated game he'd ever seen, and everybody, you know, what's in vogue to say this week for the national shows is Brad Childress threw Brett Favre under the bus. And I had to read those quotes because there were just two quotes,
yeah,
and they were both about playing out of the scheme. And I read those things twice, and I'm like, if that's throwing somebody under the bus, we are being so hypercritical and touchy with the analysis. And, you know, then maybe the side of it is, I guess, a coach just can't do that with his quarterback. So it didn't bug me as much as it did some others.
I just thought it was kind of interesting because you don't really even hear that. And as far as, you know, being hypersensitive, oh, yeah, everybody's.
But he's telling the truth, though. I mean, he's telling the truth. Again, 14 turnovers from this one position, and our team starts and stops with this individual. So, you know, if we're coming into this New England game where it's going to be really tough to beat that quarterback in that spot, obviously he never loses there, and New England's one of the best overall teams in the NFL despite the bad defensive ranking, I'd still roll my dice with Bill Belichick in that film room. We're coming back there in a quasi-must-win situation. And I'm looking at four losses this year where, granted, it's a loser's lament, but we had a spectacular opportunity to win all of those games. So it's not like you're heading into the final 10 games of the season saying, oh, no, we're awful. Where are we going to find talent? We have to hit the waiver wire. There's a ton of talent on this team. They're very close to flipping this whole conversation to good.
Very good. Paul Allen, who's the radio voice of the Minnesota Vikings, joining us here in the Patriots playbook. Obviously, Childress got fined $35,000 for criticizing the refs, so you know there's his little slap for saying what he did. One more question about Brett Favre before we move on here. Obviously, the streak is certainly of a mind here. People realize that the 291 regular season, 315 counting the playoffs, is a number that a lot of fans, I think, equate to Cal Ripken-esque numbers for the NFL. How important is that streak to Brett that you know of?
He was asked about that today at his press conference. He claimed to not even know what the number was, and he's very proud of the streak, but I think he's at a stage of his career where he knows he's a cinch Hall of Famer and he does have a Super Bowl ring. I think he's at a stage of his career where he's going to understand if he either A, doesn't start, or B, has to pull himself during the course of the game because of his ankle. I think Brett's really going to lobby and politic behind the scenes to start this game, and I don't know. I just it's not very cool to me. You know, if you don't exactly know who your quarterback's going to be up to the Sunday game, if the ankle's bad like this, he doesn't move well anyway. So does that mean now we can't roll him out of the pocket? You know, if the pressure's good via the blitz, is he not going to be able to move? You have an injured quarterback going against Bill Belichick's defense. So if Bill has 96 hours to get ready for this thing, you know, he's going to put Brett in a compromising position. So, you know, I just hope Brett realizes that if his mind says one thing, cool, because we're paying a lot of money for that mind. But if his body says that it's just not working, no matter how bad people think Tavares Jackson is, if only for a game, you have to make a move.
You know what's amazing to me, Eric, is the fact that we've actually gone to this conversation now with Paul for 12, 14 minutes, and we have yet to say the words Randy Moss.
I think
Adrian
Paul mentioned
Peterson.
Him in passing, but or Adrian Peterson.
Bro,
right?
I mean, the opportunity to watch that kid on a weekly basis, it's unbelievable how good he is. And, you know, when he started out, he was just a freak of a runner when he put 296 on San Diego for an NFL record. But he couldn't pick up the blitz, and he couldn't catch passes, and he just wasn't seeing it clearly that way.
And he had problems holding onto the ball.
Well, yeah, last year. How about
situations.
That? Zero fumbles this year, and he picks up almost every blitz and catches passes. I mean, it's just he's phenomenal on a weekly basis.
Well, seeing as he's phenomenal on a weekly basis, something that, you know, we're obviously used to seeing from time to time around here as well, and knowing that, you know, he's gone from this organization to that one, and I'm sure he would like to, you know, show well here, is there any doubt that early in the opening series, whomever is a quarterback, Randy's going to see the ball thrown his way?
I hope so. It depends on the coverage. You know, that's one good thing with Brett, and I know it's a cliche, but in the Dallas game, they rolled a safety his way every single time. The arrogant Jets used Cromartie on him in single coverage, and Randy got a deep one from 37, but he should have had two more, and Brett just missed him and threw a couple of bad balls. And then last week against the Packers, he got double covered almost the whole game. So, it you know, Bill Belichick knows as much, if not more, about Randy Moss than the Minnesota Vikings know right now. The thing is the league better open its eyes to Percy Harvin, because Randy Moss is getting all the coverage and Adrian Peterson's getting all the attention, and Percy Harvin is killing teams on a weekly basis, and he's now killing teams from a running standpoint where he's become a hybrid like Brian Westbrook. Mm-hmm. And it's interesting to note that the head coach Brad Childress was the offensive coordinator in Philadelphia when the kid from Villanova started going out wide, lining up from the slot, split backfield, I formation, single set. And that's exactly what Brad's doing with Percy right now. So I'll be very curious to see how they handle this three-headed attack with Moss and Percy and Adrian Peterson. But, you know, Randy has two TDs in three games but hasn't really exploded yet. But, again, I don't think the quarterback did him any favors in his debut. And he had no chance in the Dallas game because of the coverage. And last week he caught a TD. So it's been pretty good.
Yeah, and New England is struggling with some safety injuries right now, too. So whether they have the luxury of being able to slide a guy over there for the whole game remains to be seen. And if they do, it might be a younger, more, you know, less experienced player.
Well,
than...
I mean, speaking of young cornerbacks, I know New England has Devin McCourty, and I know he got that interception and everything. And this is an opinion that I'm sitting back on, but the problem is we can't get our rookie cornerback Chris Cook on the field on a consistent basis. He tore one meniscus in training camp, then he tore the other meniscus, I think in the Jets game or whatever, somewhere around there. and he was benched midway through the Packers game because he was getting killed. But with that said, off what I've heard about him and what I saw from him in the preseason and training camp and when he was out there, I genuinely in my heart feel that we drafted the best cornerback from the draft that took place in April. He's big, he's strapping, he's fast, and he's got a competitive arrogance to him that's really good. So I was in love with Devin McCourty and Kyle Wilson and all those guys up to the draft and didn't know much about Chris Cook. But when they start playing consecutive games and consistent games, Chris Cook's going to be a star in the National Football League.
That's an interesting take. There was one other offensive weapon I wanted to ask you about, that certainly that we didn't really get into the equation here, but his athleticism, to me, confounds me every time I watch him, and that's Vicente Shenko. Mm-hmm. I think the guy's a tremendous talent at tight end. How does he get more involved, and does he need to be more involved in your estimation?
Well, he does need to be more involved, and I thought they did it perfectly in the Packers game. He caught a touchdown that was nullified via replay where the NFL came out and privately told the Vikings, even though it was made public, that the touchdown should not have been overturned. Vicente had 10 catches in the first two games and 3 over the next 3 games. Favre was all over him in the Green Bay game. He was targeted maybe 5 to 7 times, maybe 8. And Vicente's fast. He's not the greatest when it comes to blitz pickup. You know, in fact, he had a lot to do with the defensive touchdown we gave up to Miami and didn't really do well in the blitz pickup at the Jets. But Vicente is one of those fast tight ends, kind of like Aaron Hernandez. I mean, I see how they use Aaron, and, you know, they're able to line him up wide, and they do the same thing with Vicente. And he kind of got lost in the offense while he was sweating out a hamstring injury. But, you know, it's just, again, I mean, we're talking about Adrian Peterson. You look at the attention Adrian Peterson, Percy Harvin, and Randy Moss gets, then that means Vicente Shenko should have, he should have the perfect player on him almost all the time. So the options are there. The quarterback just has to find them, and when he does, we'll start winning.
Well, let's flip it to the other side of the field then real quick before we let you go, Paul, because, you know, I think it seems to me that the great enigma actually might be, you could probably decide between a couple with this Vikings team as I kind of look at it, you know, from an outsider's point of view. You got so many weapons on offense, as we've already discussed, but then, again, people and teams, and talking to our guys this week and listening to what they have to say, they have the utmost respect for the athleticism on the Vikings defense. So how is this team 2-4? What is the one thing that does stand out to you about the defense right now that is actually working?
Well, the part that's working, I really like our linebackers. Chad Greenway's having a Pro Bowl-like year. E.J. Henderson broke his femur on Sunday Night Football in December at Arizona last year, and he's back playing at a high level, had a couple of picks in the Dallas game. They're going along well. Safety Madiu Williams, after a bad year last year, is playing pretty well this year. But, you know, when it comes to Vikings football at 2-4, it really comes down to two things, and we hit on one thing hard. The quarterback throwing the ball to the wrong team, leading to 51 points, and that's just spotting teams too many points. Our take gives -6. I mean, -6 is garbage. Teams that are -6 don't go anywhere, but you got a lot of time to recover from it, which is cool. Defensively speaking, the other thing that absolutely will turn around Vikings football this year is our getting sacks from our defensive line. Because defensive coordinator Leslie Frazier likes to play that Tampa 2 cover 2 defense. And last year we had 48 sacks, which was number one in the NFL, and I think we have 6 right now through 6 games. And, you know, when you give guys like Jared Allen and Kevin Williams the money they get, then they have to amass more sacks. Now, they get a lot of attention. You know, fairness in conversation, Jared Allen and Kevin Williams get a lot of attention every single game. And when you watch it, I bet you the center and the guard have number 93 double-teamed most of the game, and they'll use tight ends and running backs to chip Jared. But, you know, on the other side of the conversation, even though I don't watch all their games, I can't believe Dwight Freeney and Julius Peppers and guys like that aren't getting a lot of attention either. And, you know, somehow, for the most part, they seem to be getting around it. So if we can stop turning over the ball and get a better effort from our defensive line, then we can win every single game the rest of the year, and that includes this weekend.
I kind of tend to agree with you. And the other thing that worries me is you talk about, you know, the needing the defensive line to come through here. The Patriots' offensive line is coming off their worst performance maybe in 2 seasons. They were horrible.
You know, I've only watched back the first half so far of the New England-San Diego game, and, you know, I'm not going to be one to trash talk the New England Patriots, the red, white, and blue of football immortality. And I think Tom Brady's Captain Cool Man. And, you know, I have a high level of respect for the New England Patriots. But I don't think the San Diego Chargers could have done any more to put New England in a spot to just jump somebody and then make somebody play catch up. So it's starting to go over the stats and then the film and all that. And, you know, when you go into the game and you're playing Tom Brady and Bill Belichick's taking a look at the defensive tape these days, and we're 2-4 and we're minus 6 in the take give, it's we're I think we're decided underdogs in this game. And, I mean, we've lost 7 in a row on the road. I mean, we haven't won a road game since October 11th of last year at St. Louis. So the team just has to start playing better because we're underachieving. And if we lose this weekend and the Lions win, then we're tied with the Lions at the bottom of the NFC North, and that's just ludicrous at face value.
I would agree with that as well. Paul Allen, again, the radio voice of the Minnesota Vikings. Hey, thanks for spending some time with us today. We sure appreciate it. And safe travels this way this weekend.
No problem. Have a good day.
Take care, Paul.
Thanks. Good stuff, huh, Eric?
Yeah. He was forthcoming, as expected, just like he is on the radio. Left his emotions on his sleeve.
Which I like.
Yeah.
I love it.
I love it. I'd rather people be up front, especially when you're talking about a subject where – you basically know what the answer is going to be. And it's like listening to a political debate. You know what the real answer is or should be. And it's refreshing when somebody actually says it, you know, because you're so used to people masking what they really want to say or, you know, sublimating what their real views are. So it's nice to see that. And you have a kindred spirit there, John, because I know you like to wear your heart on your sleeve, too. You're a passionate fan.
We all do.
You're an objective journalist as well.
Well, you try to somehow find a way, and here's the trick, and this is why I respect what Paul does, because you try to find a way to, you know, have a the proper balance, the proper mix of the emotion and the honesty with also the duty of being a reporter first. And to and I explain this to my, you know, to my students as well, you know, at Emerson, to me, play-by-play broadcasting is the purest form of repertorial skills that exist, because you are immediate with observing and then relating what is going on in front of you.
Mm-hmm. And you have to do it with, as you know, without making a mistake.
No question.
As far as your delivery, not just mistake in what you're seeing, but your delivery of what you're seeing accurately.
You have to be accurate. You have to be smooth. You have to be pleasant to listen to.
Right.
And, oh, yeah, nowadays you got to throw in witty and entertaining, you know, in some form or fashion. So, I mean, you know, because there's just so much out there in the universe that you can listen to. You know, if a guy does his job and does everything about, you know, telling you the time and the score and the distance and all that kind of stuff, but his voice is horrible or he has no, you know, personality, let's say, to, you know, what it is he's telling you, you're eventually going to turn it off because you can't stay there with him. You might want to try to love him, but if he's just a dud, he's a dud and you're not going to stay with him. And so that's how difficult a job it really can be. There are many different facets to it, and as you know, you just heard Paul say, I mean, my gosh, he's only been doing it for 9 years, and frankly, I knew he was somewhere around the 10-year mark, but I wasn't certain. And it sounds to me on the radio like he's been doing it for at least twice as long as that. He's got that kind of, you know, certain je ne sais quoi about him. You
well,
know?
It's natural.
He's got
like
a little
said,
something. Yeah.
Yeah. He wasn't trained in the, you know, and he wasn't influenced by what those big schools that he mentioned expect you to be.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
He's just who he is, which is, you know, I think a passionate fan who just happens to be in that role.
An announcer.
Yeah.
An announcer boy. That's exactly right. All right, let's sneak a timeout in here. And again, our question of the day is very simple. If you could ask Brett Favre a question, or if you could tell him one thing, what would it be? Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is the Ace Ticket Hotline. Call us up on Facebook as well, and we'll talk more about that and get you all set for Sunday's matchup with the Vikings. Not the Vikings. We have to be respectful. The Vikings coming up in the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday. Hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the Playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the Playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's gotta be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right, you can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fire services available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit cards.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open.
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America NA, member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the Playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
And don't forget, you've got webradio@patriots.com as the email address to fire off your email, Facebook page as well. Make sure if you're not following us on Facebook, you can find me, John Rook, R-O-O-K-E, last name. On Facebook and submit the friend request, and then you'll be with us. Well, if you haven't done that yet, we can do it now because I got the page up. We can do the friend thing, and you can be logged in, and we can be chatting and talking about the Patriots. And of course, if you want to go that route, each and every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday that we have the show, you can log on there. You can even leave your questions there if you like, or just to participate in a little chat if you want to. During the course of the broadcast, because I have the page up and running while we're going. So that's how we can contact each other and get a hold. Maribeth sends me this via Facebook chat. She says, my question for Favre, why didn't you just retire? One of the many times you retired.
God bless
you,
Mary.
Very similar to your question, obviously, Eric. And maybe that's just it. Maybe that seems to be the overwhelming question that fans do want to ask of Favre. And you know, my answer would be is his ego won't let him. His ego won't let him. It's that simple.
Right.
I mean, the guy's got a supercharged ego. I would also argue that in order to play at that level, to be one of the elite, to be considered one of the best ever at your particular position, which undoubtedly I think the history books will look back on and say, in spite of the interceptions, Favre will still be considered one of the best quarterbacks, gunslingers, whatever you want to call it, that really ever played this game.
That was some tight pants you got on.
You know, in spite of some of those comments that he has made that we choose to sort of dole out whenever we feel fit.
Let zippers and buttons slow you down. With open fly jeans, it's always out and camera ready.
Have you seen that spoof?
No, that's hilarious.
It's a Saturday Night Live skit about, you know, his Wrangler commercials.
Yeah, I put my pants on just like anyone else, one leg at a time. Then I pull my penis out.
It's hilarious.
That's great.
Do a That's YouTube fantastic. Search for it later. I'm sure you'll find it somewhere.
I'll definitely do that.
It's good stuff.
Almost as good as SpongeBob, John.
Not quite as good as SpongeBob, but it's close. It's close. Or the dolphin cackle, right, Kevin? He's going to go find that.
Yeah,
one
he's
now.
Looking it up now.
Yeah, I'm sure he is. See, Kevin's got to learn to pull the trigger a little bit faster. There we go. I got to admit. You know, I can see where that would be the overriding question. You know, I ask, well, how come he didn't just retire? But then again, we've never really had the benefit of having Favre play for us or having someone like Favre come in and basically not just resurrect your team or your program, but give your team hope. I mean, that's
well, Tom Brady.
The Jets. Yeah. Well, Brady, but Brady is different from Favre in a sense. I mean, Brady's got more championships than Favre. Brady doesn't seem to be quite as, shall we say, egocentric as Favre. And I get the impression that when Tom Brady knows it's time to go, he's going to go.
I hope so. I mean, just for his image sake, you know, when you remember the Monday night game, I think they played the Bears. The Packers played I think it was the Bears. It was the last regular season game in, when was it, 04, 05? When did Favre go to the Jets?
That would have been 06, wouldn't it?
Well, this is his second year with the Vikings.
And then
right?
He played 1 year, so that would be...
Eight. So 08, he went to the Jets. So,
to the Jets.
Okay, yeah, so it had to be... So
after 07.
06 or 07.
Right.
I think it might have been 06. It was a Monday night game, and Favre was being interviewed by the sideline reporter at the time at the end of the game, and he started welling up and broke down in tears because she asked him if this was his last game. And at that point, he had me. I thought, all right, you know what? He's crying. He's obviously come to the conclusion that he's done. It's been a great career. He won a championship. You know, I was at that point, I was a Favre, I don't even want to say fan, but I respected him for what he did throughout his career. Then when he came back, I lost a little respect for him. Because he made everybody think he was done, and then he came back, changed his mind. Then he decided to retire again, then he went to the Jets. Then he decided to retire again and went to the Vikings. Then he decided to... I mean, he's completely tarnished his entire reputation in my eyes. And whether or not, you know, yeah, he's going to make the Hall of Fame. You can never take the championship away from him, and obviously it against this team is, you know, who he beat to win it. So you're never going to forget that fact. But to me, he's just going to – I think he's really – he's overstayed his welcome. And no matter how good a guest you are, if you overstay your welcome, you leave a bad taste in the mouth of your host. And I think Favre has done that with his career. Sad to
you know
say.
What? Yeah,
sad to say.
Yeah. No, again –
and I hope Brady doesn't fall into that, drama queen You know,
the only thing Brady's fallen into is taking advice from his wife on his haircut
style. Well, you got to listen to the wife, I suppose, right?
Well, when your wife is Giselle Bundchen, yeah. You're going to listen to her, I think.
So, yeah, I hope he's not like some of these boxers who don't know when to hang it up and they come out of retirement. I mean, I like to think Brady has more sense than that and that he won't go out that way.
I get the impression that he's not, and that's just because, you know, from hearing Tom talk, as he does to the media, you know, a couple times a week, it's certainly his post-game opportunity, and when he's, you know, visiting, with, you know, on Patriots Monday and does his, you know, his gigs there, you know, I get the impression that, you know, he's still, you know, except for his, you know, the fame and fortune that goes around with being a, you know, a Super Bowl-winning MVP-style quarterback, he seems to be a fairly regular guy. I've never... gotten that impression with Brett Favre, and maybe that's part of the reason why he's gone out of his way to do those jeans commercials put him in front of the public, the perception that he's a regular guy. Mm. And I don't think he's anything close to being a regular guy. I mean, the one, you know, the jeans commercial when he's there, you know, playing, flag football or whatever with, you know, all his boys in the mud hole there and he's throwing the ball. Come on, you really think Brett Favre would actually be capable of doing something like that?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Yeah.
He's an elitist. He absolutely leaves the impression he is the ultimate elitist. That, wherever he walks, you know, it supposedly turns, you know, that pathway to gold or whatever.
Well, and he does work out with the high school kids in the off season. Not too far of a stretch to think that the commercial shoot was actually doubling as his off season workout, you know?
Could have.
Very sarcastic when I say that.
I hope so, because maybe he does go home and work out with the high school kids. I don't know. You know what? I mean, if he does, that's fantastic. Then why doesn't he actually seem genuine, you know, the rest of the year?
Yeah, no, I agree.
I mean, again, I got to get back to my earlier point. The fact is that to compete at that level for as long as he has, and let's make no mistake about it, as I said, he will go down as one of the greats to have played the game at his position. You must have a supersized ego to see you through the process. It's the only way you can exist because, frankly, your ego is what drives you when common sense should probably dictate you are done. And so here is Brett Favre, who certainly has a healthy ego. That's an understatement. Brett Favre has an ego on steroids. And this is what happens when your ego gets on steroids. You don't know when to quit. We all expected him, you know, thought that he would quit, the first time he actually said, I'm going to quit. And, of course, that was three or four retirements ago. So, you know, yeah, you need that kind of an ego to get you through, you know, the guy is going to try to play this Sunday on a broken ankle. Some people say that's selfish. Other people say that's courageous. Other people might say that's
ludicrous.
Yeah, and other people say that's pure stupidity.
Yeah.
So there's no middle ground here, Eric. It's either or, one way or the other. Yeah. You've got to stand on one side here, and it's either one of the greatest things you've ever seen or it's one of the most stupid things you've ever seen. But it's the ego that tells him that he can even consider that to begin with, when common sense should override everything. And this is what separates us mere mortals from the superstars of the game.
Hey, can I go on a little tangent, as we are wont to do on this show? Just ESPN just ran a promo for their Thursday Night Football lineup that's coming up, and it featured Robert Kraft.
I saw that yesterday for the first time.
When he's speeding around in his golf cart and going over to CBS Scene to catch the game at night. I hadn't seen that before.
Now, I want to know who the people are that are with him, that are having pizza and stuff watching the game, because I want to know how I get invited to that party.
I know.
You know? But I actually saw that. If you haven't seen
spirituality, faith, and democracy are the cornerstones of...
I don't think he says that in the commercial.
No, I don't think he does either. But it's, what was it, on ESPN?
ESPN promo,
Yeah, it was an ESPN promo, but it was a promo for the NFL's coverage of Thursday Night Football, which will actually be on the NFL Network.
Actually, you know what? That's right. It was an NFL Network logo at the end. It's, they bought time, apparently, on ESPN, because that's what I'm watching right now.
Because I thought it was – I remember thinking at the time I saw it, I said, hey, that's cool, there's Mr. Kraft. And then I said, well, that's an NFL Network promo on ESPN?
Yeah.
What's going on here? They're competitors.
Yeah, they bought time.
They must have bought the time.
Right.
So,
it's a pretty cool ad.
Yeah, look for it on ESPN when they advertise the NFL Network Thursday Night Football games, which will begin – after Thanksgiving? Was it the last 6 weeks of the season?
I believe that's accurate.
Last 6 weeks? So it'll be right around Thanksgiving is when we actually get our first Thursday night game. Or I guess the Thursday after Thanksgiving. Because I think
Thursday games will be Thanksgiving. Right, yeah.
Right, and then...
So from there on out.
From there on out, we have Thursday night football, and it'll be on the NFL Network. Because the first NFL Network game is actually the Thursday night on Thanksgiving, is it not?
Yeah, that third game.
The third game that they started doing a couple of years ago, right?
Yep.
Okay. So that'll be coming up. You'll see that promo coming up, I'm sure. So I think that's good for Mr. Kraft. It's all good.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the question is, how many people do you think around the league actually recognize him outside of New England?
Oh, I think he's very recognizable. He's one of the most influential owners in the league, sure. I mean, he doesn't do as much media as, like, you know, Jerry Jones or even I've seen Dan Snyder do a couple of spots too here and there, but I think he actually did one with Jerry Jones.
Right.
But No, I think people know who Robert Kraft is outside of here. I mean, especially after the guy's risen, you know, he's raised three Lombardi trophies in the last 10 years.
Yeah. Yeah, well.
And he is one of the most influential power brokers behind the scenes, so.
That's true. That's true. How much, I guess I didn't really pay close attention to it in terms of the background periphery. How much can you tell it's Gillette?
Oh, I can.
Or the Patriots.
Well, if you work here, you can. Okay. Like, you can tell that it's our elevator. You can see yeah, a little bit of the background of the visitor's tunnel where he's driving his cart out there. And yeah, if you know the place well enough, you'd be able to recognize, even though it's only for a split second, the editing is pretty quick.
Mm-hmm. Chris in Seattle sends this email. He says, "Hi, John. I haven't heard too much talk about the Chargers' onside kick. Do you think the Chargers simply executed it perfectly, or were we caught with our pants down? Seemed like an obvious move to go for an onside kick in that situation."
I think it was a little bit of both. I think it caught them a little bit off guard because I don't think New England had its hands team in there. I think they were prepared for a regular kickoff. I could be wrong because it happened so fast and I didn't get to look at a replay of it at the time. But I don't think they had a hands team in there.
No, they didn't.
Because
they did not have a hands team in there, which is, I guess, you know, really sort of a, I mean, did they expect it? It was clear they did not expect it.
Yeah.
So were the Patriots caught with their pants down? I'd have to say yes, they were.
And it was the second time in the game that they tried an onside kick, if you remember.
That's true.
After the Chargers went up 3-0 in the first quarter,
it
wasn't a typical onside kick. It was sort of one of those, it was a long onside kick.
It was wasn't it a direct kick right at one of the up backs?
Well,
or
it was. I think no. It was sort of Chris Brown, the kicker, was trying to sort of kick over that first line of coverage.
Oh, that's right, and pooch it.
Enough so that his coverage guys could get, you know, past that first wave of defenders and get to the empty spot in time. But it just so happened that wasn't as good a kick, and it went, I think, directly to I think it was Dane Fletcher. But I could
yes,
be wrong.
Yes, it was
that
Dane
too.
Fletcher. Yeah, you're absolutely right. That's right. That's what I'm thinking of.
So it was, they should have had their head on a swivel on special teams from the get-go because
right.
of that.
Right.
And then, like you said, the situation in the game, that looked like it might have been a primed opportunity for an onside kick. So, and I think Bill admitted as much that they were, I think his words, you know, could have been coached better, could have been executed better. So I think they kind of tacitly admitted that they were a little bit off guard there.
Interesting. Okay. Fair enough. What do we got in terms of, what are your thoughts setting up this week? I mean, quite frankly, I mentioned this a little bit yesterday, and I wanted to get your thoughts today before we wrap up your visit here. That
sure.
I have to admit, 3 weeks ago, during the bye week maybe, whenever it was, we were talking about how this three-game gauntlet was going to be so incredible for the team to run through, and now they've got an unbelievable shot here right in front of them of actually sweeping through it undefeated.
Yeah.
6-1, I don't think anybody in their right mind really envisioned for this team. How in the world did this happen, Eric, based on you know what your observations are?
Well,
how did they make this happen?
Well, first of all, I think we have to recognize that they've gotten some very lucky breaks in pretty much every game that have gone their way. Second, the teams that we expected, no team in the league right now, even the ones that have winning records, I think, no team in the league is dominant, and no team in the league is playing their best football right now.
Yeah.
There's no team that you can point to and say they're really at the top of their game. I wouldn't want to face them any week. I really think, more so than any other year, any given Sunday, any team really can beat any other team. The good teams, the bad teams, there's not a whole lot of difference between them in a normal year, and this year that's even more so. Not because the bad teams have gotten better, but I think because the teams we expected to be good have taken a step back. And I don't know what the explanation for that is. That's just the observation that I have from, you know, watching other games around the league through these first we're almost at the halfway point of the season.
I believe that too.
And I still don't think New England has played its best game yet. I think the closest they came was against Miami.
Mm-hmm.
But even in that game, they struggled on defense, giving up, you know, the 400 total yards of offense in that game. I do think they can play better. I don't think we've seen them play their best football, which is an encouraging sign, given that they're 5-1 already.
Yep.
And I think they're the beneficiaries. I said this on PFW in Progress earlier. it almost, you know, when they beat Miami, I thought, okay, there was the motivation, the PFW picks and all that stuff. They proved a point. Fine. I thought it was almost a fluke of a game. Then against Baltimore, they came back, you know, they looked like they were done for. They came from behind. They won the game in gritty fashion. Okay, 2 weeks in a row, kind of a coincidence. They put a game like that together. Then against San Diego, I mean, when the receivers are dropping to the ground and just leaving the ball there before they even get touched down, getting the ball stripped, the backwards pass that was almost a lateral that Ninkovich almost took to the house, it's getting to the point where, you remember in 2001 when everything started to fall that needed to fall New England's way following that Week 10 game against the Rams?
The Rams, right.
Who was it? David Patton getting knocked unconscious on the sideline and keeping the reception against Buffalo. Those kind of things happen, it seems like, in years when a team is on its way to a Super Bowl. Everything falls into place. And when they get into those opportunities where, look, they could have given up the game to San Diego, but they didn't. They managed, you know, it came down to a missed kick from 50 yards, but they found a way to win. They let Buffalo back in the game and almost gave up the lead, but they didn't. You know, they were almost down against Baltimore for good, and yet they clawed their way back. They're, you know, I still am not seeing, like we talked about earlier, I'm still not seeing the consistent pressure on the quarterback from the front seven that I'd like. I'm still not seeing the corners and safeties play press coverage enough and give up short passes rather than 15 to 20 yard passes on every play. I'm still not seeing the offense click the way I think it's capable of. I'm certainly not seeing Brady put up the kind of numbers I think he's capable of. I'm still not seeing a running game that's consistent week to week from your lead back. Woodhead's getting some good production, but all that said, they've found a way to be 5-1. And in the year when nobody is playing good football around the league, I think they're the Patriots are the best beneficiaries of that. And I think, I know it's absurd of 3-4 weeks ago for us to say that they're a contender, but at this point they are a contender.
Have you changed your mind on potential one loss record?
Because
you were a staunch supporter for 8-8.
8-8, give or take a game, was what I predicted. And at this point, they have 5 wins with, what do they have, 9 games left now?
Mm, correct.
I think 11 wins is possible now because they've already beaten a couple of teams that I didn't think they were going to beat on the schedule. And looking at the schedule coming up, you know, the Vikings are coming into town. I was very close to picking the Vikings again this week, but I don't know. There's something about the way these things are falling for the Patriots that leads me to believe that at home they're gonna win again this week.
You're getting ready to side with the Pats this
week? I'm getting ready to side with the Pats this week in another game that's gonna come down to the last drive, the last series, the last play, maybe even. Because I think that's what we're gonna get every week. This is exactly the way the Patriots started their dynastic run, was with games that you were at the edge of your seat every week in those first couple of years until 2004 and, you know, 2004 to 07 when they started, you know, actually blowing teams out when they were supposed to.
Right.
It's going back to those old days when you never knew week to week what was going to happen, but you started to think after a while you had confidence that they would win. You just, it was always a nail biter. They never made it easy on you. And I think that's what we're going to get again this week.
Wow. I'm impressed. The Patriots are actually turning Eric Scalavino a little bit.
Well,
I'm impressed.
They've done it 3 weeks in a row, and I think, and I don't think, you know, one or two games could be kind of, you know, once is an accident, two is a trend, three is maybe more than that. So
one is an accident, two is a trend,
three is a problem is what the maxim is, but
yeah.
It's not a problem if you're winning.
No.
So I was trying to find a better, you know.
Three is a virtual certainty.
Yeah.
Yeah. Understood.
So, you know, if they do it again this week, they still have the tough games. They have Pittsburgh on the road. They have Indy coming to town. You know,
they're still going to play at
Chicago.
The Jets.
Got to
play the Jets.
I'm not going to look past Cleveland either after they went on the road and spanked the Saints at home. So mm-hmm. they still have a tough stretch that they're going through. It's just They've already won more games than I expected them to at this point.
So if 11 is possible, what's your new projection?
Well, I still think that's the ceiling.
The ceiling. But yeah. What do you think in your heart of hearts they'll finish at this point through six games?
I don't know, 10?
Yeah.
Maybe.
I think that's what Paul.
That means they're only going to go 5-5 the rest of the way?
Well, it's a tough schedule, John. Like you said, we've got Pittsburgh on the road. We've got Indy. We've got the Jets again. We've got the Packers who, you know, they're not playing great right now, but who knows how they'll be playing a month and a half from now. They're probably still going to win that division.
How about you, John?
Right now, I think 12-4 is a possibility. I would say that 11-5 would probably be it.
Yeah.
But I think 12-4 is certainly a possibility. And I said this before last week's win at San Diego. I want to go on record. I said it before, especially if they won the game, I thought that 12-4 would be a possibility. I also think 12-4 would have them right there in position to get a bye in the opening round of the playoffs.
Sure. I agree with that.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
I started off at 10-6, and now I'm leaning toward 11-5.
Well, I was at 9-7 with a one game, you know, flip either way, which meant as bad as 8-8 or as good as 10-6.
Yep.
Well, I'm improving mine basically by two games. I think you
have to at this point.
I think 11-5 they'll get to, and they could get to 12-4.
I really hope for all our sakes 8-8 is out of the question now.
Well, I'd say that, you know, unless, you know who, quick, knock on wood, and I'm not saying any names, but unless they have a significant injury problem the rest of the way, I'd say that they put 8-8 in the rearview mirror.
You're wishing, you don't want to mention Russ Ventrone's name? Really?
No.
Wow.
No, I don't.
Okay.
I don't. Sorry, I don't want to jinx anything. You know, hey, that's the fan in me, you know?
Right.
That's the fan in me. Plus, you realize, and I think you know as well as everybody, it makes our job a heck of a lot more fun every week when things are going
it's
well.
It's fun, and it's easier to get, you know, the players, the coaches, everybody else to talk and get what you
need. Yeah, but
we
don't get near the volume of emails when things are going well. I mean,
that's
today,
true.
For instance, you know, I thought this was a great question. You know, if you could ask Brett Favre a question, what would you ask? Zero. Well, we've had, what, two?
Yeah.
That's about it.
Although we did.
So I'm guessing that everybody feels the same way.
Out of
silly
this,
me for asking the dumb question.
Out of this positive start, we did get a cake. That is true.
What?
The PFW guys got a cake.
They got a cake?
Yeah, from a listener yesterday. And it was like one of those Carvel ice cream cakes.
Oh, come on.
It was awesome. It had 5-1 in frosting, like on the roof of it.
God.
Oh,
it was pretty intense.
Well, I know the UK Pats fans are going to be in tomorrow, right?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Okay.
In full
actually,
force.
Actually, I just sent out the mass email. They're actually buying lunch for tomorrow.
In full
That's
force.
John, they're including you in that as well.
I'm privileged
so
to be a part of that.
The email is in your inbox as well to try to get the order assembled because I think Warren wanted me to assemble it.
Yeah.
That's correct, Eric.
I think so.
Nice. Yeah, I think so.
What a good bunch of Joes, huh?
Really are.
Fantastic. Can't wait to meet them all. That'll be fun.
Yep.
Well, I should have some sit in on the show tomorrow, too. They want
sure.
to sit in.
Yeah.
I would be totally open to that. We've got extra mics in the studio.
Yeah.
If they want to sit in on the playbook, we'll let them sit
we'll
in.
Let them step inside the playbook.
We'll let them drop some plays.
Absolutely. So maybe they could give us a few hints from Liverpool or Man U or whatever.
Right.
All right, Eno, you got to get going. So thanks for staying a little bit over time.
No problem,
today,
buddy. We'll see you tomorrow.
We'll be there.
With
all right,
lunch.
We'll pause. Absolutely. The lunch bell is ringing.
All right, man.
We'll take the time out here. And again, the inbox is open, webradio@patriots.com. If you could ask one question of Brett Favre or tell him one thing, what would it be? Webradio@patriots.com, 508-543-7482 is our ace ticket hotline. Facebook page is up. In fact, you know, if you want, the easiest way to do it is just go to johnrook.com. Because on johnrook.com, you have my Facebook link. And you have my Twitter link. If you want to follow me on Twitter, you can do that too. I'm trying to get into this 21st century thing, grudgingly, because I know I'm an old fogey. But you know what? And every once in a while, you know, a blind squirrel finds a nut.
We've had requests too, John, today. We've actually had phone calls trying to figure out which John Rook you were. So I had to tell, you know, Derek from the University of Arizona and a few other people that you were the guy in the picture with the microphone kind of.
Yeah, I have the headset on. You know, that's kind of funny because I only know really what one or two other John Rooks with spell the name the same way as
well,
I do. R-O-O-K-E.
Apparently, there's a few because we have people looking for you on Facebook, which is a good
Seriously?
Thing.
Seriously?
It's a good thing.
Seriously? There's more R-O-O-K-E's out there?
They're
all imposters.
That's what Derek said. He tried to, he had me vividly describe the picture of you on your
They're all imposters. I'm the real deal.
Will the real John Rook please stand up?
Please stand up. That sounds like To Tell the Truth. You ever see that show, or are you too, you know, you're too young for that?
No, I don't remember that one.
No, you're too young for that. I got socks as old as you, Kevin, and I still wear.
That's actually, I need some of those because mine get holes in them pretty quick these days.
Well, they have holes in them now.
They don't make them like they used to.
They got holes in them now. All right, well, we'll sneak the timeout in here. Email inbox is open, and coming up, Andy Kent from AOL Fan House right here inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome onto the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.
So, Pat, how many Advantage miles have you racked up on American Airlines this year?
That's kind of a personal question, Brian.
It's nothing to be embarrassed about.
I'm not embarrassed.
Oh, okay, then I'll ask you again. How many miles have you racked up?
236,000.
Miles? That's got to be wrong, because I fly a lot more than you.
Well, flying isn't the only way you can earn Advantage miles, Brian.
Right. I knew that.
I mean, you can earn miles when you buy all kinds of stuff, you know? Stuff you use every day.
Also, like, you know, ping pong balls, Argyle socks, really tall ladders.
Like clothes, you know, movie rentals, gas for your car.
Oh, shish kebabs, Russian nesting dolls, snow globes.
I was thinking, like, newspapers, you know? When you bank, go to restaurants.
Oh, fake mustaches.
Yeah, Brian. You can earn miles when you go to a novelty store and buy a fake mustache.
Awesome.
You can earn Advantage miles for the stuff you buy every day, whatever that stuff may be. Learn more at aa.com/advantage. We know why you fly. We're American Airlines.
You may know that Verizon Fios has more HD channels than cable, but what you may not know is that now you can sign up for Verizon Fios with no term contract required. And if you're not absolutely satisfied, you can cancel with no early termination fees. That's right. You can get Fios TV, internet, and phone at a guaranteed low price of just $89.99 a month for a year with no term contract required. And if you don't love it, you can cancel with no early termination fees. Just call 1-866-892-6057. That's 1-866-892-6057, and you'll know why now is the best time to switch to Fios. Get your game face on. Play the Gridiron Challenge at patriots.com/gridironchallenge and enter for your chance to win tickets and a chance to win the grand prize, an all-inclusive trip to the big game. Brought to you by Verizon. For official rules and terms, visit patriots.com/gridironchallenge. For new customers only, equipment charges, taxes, and fees, and other terms apply. Rate may increase after 1 year. Fios service is available in select areas. Offer expires 9/18/10. Call for more details.
Okay, I'll have the Giganto Burger with Cheese Combo.
Oh, will that be all?
That's it.
Go, Pats!
What?
If you're like this man, you have what is known as a healthy obsession with the Patriots.
Hi, just the jeans today?
Yeah, thanks.
Go, Pats!
Okay, that was weird.
I know, right?
At Bank of America, we understand, and we can help.
I'll just take this with you already.
Oh, here you go.
Go, Pats!
Indeed, go, Pats.
With Patriots checking from Bank of America, you can do more than just tell the world about your loyalty. You can show them by getting the Patriots logo on your checks and debit card.
I say, here's a baguette. Go long.
I'm open!
Whoops.
Ask your Bank of America associate if Patriots checking is right for you. Or go to bankofamerica.com/patriots.
Bank of America N.A. Member FDIC. Copyright 2010 Bank of America Corporation. An account setup fee may apply in some states.
Now's your chance to hit up John Rook inside the playbook on the Ace Ticket Hotline at 508-543-7482.
Welcome back inside Patriots Playbook for a Wednesday here on Patriots.com Radio. John Rook, Eric Scalavino from PFW with us in the opening hour, as was Paul Allen from Minnesota Vikings Radio and KFAN. Andy Kent from AOL Fan House, who not only covers the AFC East blog, he also is a writer and blogger for Dolphins.com. We've had him on the program before, and he's going to join us in 10 to 15 minutes. And we'll go over some of the news and notes from around the AFC East division concerning the Patriots, the Dolphins, the Jets, and the Bills. Bills almost came up with a win over the Ravens this past weekend, but are still winless. And You know, we mentioned, I guess it was a couple of weeks ago when we were getting ready to play Buffalo, that, wondered if Chan Gailey might actually have his job in jeopardy. And the answer to that was no, that, you know, you need to have 2 or 3 years to at least get your system in place. And, you know, I'm kind of beginning to wonder if, you know, if this team somehow, yeah, they got close, but they didn't win the game. So I'm kind of wondering, well, if that is the case, then what happens if they, you know, go 2-14 or 1-15 or 0-16? Don't you have to do something? I mean, I have a feeling that might be coming up in Minnesota. Here's a team that's underachieving at 2-4, a team that was largely thought to be one of the, you know, preseason contenders in the NFC, along with Dallas. And you could certainly make a great argument right now for both Minnesota and Dallas being two of the biggest underachievers, two of the largest disappointments in the NFL this entire season. And for the first time, I don't know, maybe it was this morning, I think I was listening to ESPN radio or something this morning, I'm hearing that, you know, Wade Phillips' job might be in jeopardy. And Jerry Jones, I know, has said from the get-go that, you know, no, we're not going to make any rash changes, not going to make rash decisions, we'll hope that we'll turn this thing around. But at what point do you say it's not turning around? We need to do something to change direction. Sometimes you have to make a move just to make a move.
With that said too, John, I think when you're talking about these coaches like Wade Phillips, you have to consider Brad Childress in that mix.
Well, I see. That's where I was going with this, Kev. I totally think that, you know, if Minnesota, as Paul was telling us in the last hour, if Minnesota ends up 2-5, if the Patriots beat them, yeah, I mean, then they pretty much spent the bit on their season.
That was Spalding getting sick, by the way.
That was Spalding?
Yeah, Spalding from Caddyshack.
Oh, on the scene when he barfs in the fancy car, right?
Oh yeah.
Yeah, I got it. See, now I'm gonna have duty thinking in my brain the rest of the day here.
You think from a Vikings perspective though, John, you get Favre to come back, you have Adrian Peterson in the prime of his career, you go out and you make a move getting Randy Moss. This is your shot. This is your window. And to be 2-4, like how you as an owner, how can you find that acceptable right now?
No, you can't. And I guess, you know, maybe that's a question Eric and I were talking about earlier. If we had a couple of questions we would ask, maybe say, you know, Ziggy Wolf, who's the Vikings owner. It's like, well, when do you pull the plug on this whole procedure?
I can't imagine if you had Ziggy Wolf in front of you right now and you asked him that question. I can't imagine that he would think the window extends beyond this year. This is it. You don't have Randy Moss under control next year. Brett Favre's all likelihood probably going to hang him up. This was your chance. You have no, I mean, Tavares Jackson, do you really think that's the answer? I don't think so.
No, I don't think so.
I mean, this was their window. This was that you have a. You
well,
have
that's all. That's why, that's one of the main reasons why Favre came back. That's why, you know, one of the main reasons they went out and they got Randy Moss, you know, from the Patriots.
And that's why.
Because they knew they needed to do what they have with what they have right now. Because, you know, after this year, who knows?
And it's why all us Brett Favre haters are so happy to see this team go in the tank.
Why do we have? Let me ask you this question, Kevin. And I guess, you know, something we should have probably asked Eric, although I think he alluded to it. Why do we have Brett Favre haters? Why do so many people hate on him?
I don't know. I think it's more.
Why?
I think it's
what has he really done? Other than, you know, obviously being very self-serving, what has he done that's really affected your enjoyment of the sport of pro football?
Not much. And the one Super Bowl he did win was largely thanks to Desmond Howard, as we can all remember.
Yes. Oh, yeah. Unfortunately, yeah.
I mean, I was a 10-year-old kid. I think that was the last time I actually cried myself to sleep that night.
The only time I ever cried myself to sleep was when Jim O'Brien was the place kicker for the Baltimore Colts.
Yeah.
Super Bowl 5. Super Bowl 5?
I don't know. That was
no,
well
no, you because you weren't alive then. I'm just trying to remember the correct number. I'm pretty sure it was Super Bowl 5 when the Colts beat the Cowboys. Cowboys, you know, played horribly that day, but the Colts played even more horribly, and he kicked the last second field goal to beat the Cowboys 16-13. And that's the only time I can ever remember as a child crying myself to sleep in bed that night.
Yeah.
It was after Jim O'Brien kicked that field goal to beat the Cowboys. And this was, what, 1971?
Yeah.
Yeah. So
I just think, though, that just the overdramatic, the theatrics that Favre puts into everything and the fact that ESPN just feeds off this and shoves it down your throat 24/7, I don't see how you can not get sick of it as a fan.
Well, I like to deride Brett Favre, I think, as much as anybody else, because it seems to be a popular thing to do. The fact of the matter is, he doesn't take away from my enjoyment of the game. I admire Favre for his longevity in the game. Say what you want to about him not knowing when to get out, which I'm sure is, you know, what most everybody is, what they would ask him. Well, how come it's taking you so long to get out and not, you know, see that the light at the end of the tunnel is the proverbial oncoming train? Why? What has caused you to want to stick around as long as you have? And part of my explanation for that was, as I mentioned a short while ago, you know, you got to have a supersized ego to exist, and thrive and to be a superstar at any level in certainly in professional sports. But Brett's ego is on steroids, and so it's his ego that's really kept him from gracefully walking away, because he still thinks he can do it. Now,
yeah.
Okay, put that aside, because who am I to deny him his right to be, you know, the ultimate egotist? Yeah. I shouldn't be able to tell him that. Nobody should tell him that, and undoubtedly nobody does tell him that, not even his wife. You know, and hey, his wife probably has as much reason to tell him to shove it as anybody else.
No kidding.
You know, so
and with all she's been through, didn't she have the
especially everything she's
stuff?
Been through? Yeah, she had breast cancer, and it was a very wide, you know, a case that was talked about a year or so ago, and now she's got this whole, you know, Jen Sturger thing to put up with, and
yep.
You know, sure, yeah, if anybody should be, you know, ready for Brett to give it up, it would have to be Deanna Favre, but apparently that's not happening. But here's the point: while I want to say, take a hike, Brett, I'm not going to. I've stopped. After his first retirement comeback, I said, you know what? Here's a guy. I said, clearly, here's a guy that's gonna, you know, want to be a hanger-oner. It's a shame. We all don't want to see it. The reason we don't want to see him do it is because we're afraid he's gonna taint our memory of him. We want to remember Brett when he was, you know, at the top of his game. We want to hate Brett Favre, especially in Patriot Nation, because of what he did to us, you know, in the Super Bowl in 1996. What was it? Six. Yeah. So, you know, the Desmond Howard Super Bowl. You're right. So, I mean, we want to hate him for that, and we want to remember him for that, because that's when he was at the peak of his game.
Yep.
And, you know, the problem with that is that, you know, he still has ability. He knows he has the ability, and there is still a market for him.
Yeah.
So if you have ability, plus you have a need, you're going to have a marriage. And, you know, it's like any walk of life. You know, I have a job because there's a need for my services. You have a job because there's a need for your services.
Barely.
Well, okay, maybe. But that's why everybody has a job, is because somebody needs you for what you can do. And so there's always going to be a Jets. There's always going to be a Vikings. There's always going to be a Cleveland Brown. There's always going to be a Minnesota you know, there's always going to be a team that will say, you know what, he's a better option than what we have. Now, Brett may ultimately decide, because of this whole ankle thing, and I've thought this from the very beginning of the season when things started going poorly for the Vikings, that, you know, this has got to be it, and I'm going to stand by this. You know, I mean, I realize that, you know, Brett's supersized ego on steroids may decide, you know what, I don't want to go out like this. I want to give it one more shot in an effort to try to not go out like this. But then at the same time, it can get worse.
Yeah, and I think that's what
we're
seeing.
It can get worse.
Ten picks in the last six games, I mean.
It's liable. Yeah, exactly. And it's liable to get worse, not only from a personal perspective, but from a team perspective, because he might not have Randy Moss to throw to. So, you know, amongst others. Although, Percy Harvin, as Paul was talking to us about, and certainly you have the best running back, I think, overall in the NFL, and Adrian Peterson to hand off to, and, you know, and so there's still great pieces to that puzzle, but his health may finally be telling him, his 41-year-old body may finally be telling him, you know what, you can't do this anymore.
I tell you what, John, Percy Harvin has gone off the last 3 weeks, and
well,
the one excuse
the one that
for that,
me.
The one the one responsible for that is Randy Moss. I'm convinced of it.
Well, yeah, because Randy has pulled attention away from Percy Harvin, and therefore Harvin is getting opportunities.
He's doing for Percy Harvin what he did for Wes Welker in New England.
There's no question.
I'm convinced of it. And Percy Harvin
right.
has just been eating.
I think you're on to something. I really do. I think there's good accuracy in that.
Because he has just exploded.
Yep. And Percy Harvin is the one that scares me the most about Sunday. Not Randy. Really not Peterson, although I could see Peterson, you know, going for 150. And it wouldn't totally shock me. It's not Shanku, who I think is a great athletic tight end, as we talked about. The one that really scares me about busting some big plays is Percy Harvin.
I agree. And he's very much involved in that behind the line of scrimmage, screen passing game, reverse, double reverse. They run a lot of those extended handoffs to him to get him on the edge.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, him against our outside linebackers is a matchup that could worry me.
No question. I think that may be one of the key matchups, in fact, to look at.
It's one of those guys that you have to keep contained on him, and especially not only in the offensive game, but you know he's their kick returner.
Here's the other worry about the matchup on Sunday. Also, as Paul Allen was telling us, he feels like the strongest suit of the defense for the Vikings has been the play of the linebackers. And, you know, of course, that feeds right into some of these short possession type, you know, receiver, you know, situations that we put ourselves into, collectively, of course, you know, Wes Welker over the middle, Aaron Hernandez, over the middle, Gronkowski, you know, obviously, you'll probably see a lot of Algie Crumpler stay back and block to chip away at a guy like Jared Allen, who certainly would continue to be a force, you know, on that front four for the Vikings. So, you know, the opportunity there for over the middle, if those linebackers are playing the way that they should be, the Patriots' chances at going over the middle like that and doing the things that they do well will be lessened. Couple that with the fact that you don't have Moss to stretch the field and make the opposing defense, you know, respect that particular ability that you have. I said this yesterday, and I'm going to say it again today, and I'll probably mention it again tomorrow. This matchup does not really favor New England on Sunday. We all say, oh, well, the Patriots will win. Patriots find a way to win. The Vikings are terrible. They're 2-4. They got a quarterback on one leg, blah, blah, blah. The matchup does not favor New England.
Nope.
Man-to-man, mano-a-mano, physical matchup, position-to-position, it does not favor New England. If you look at it strictly from a man-on-man matchup point of view, this matchup very much favors Minnesota.
I agree.
And the only thing right now that's keeping me from thinking that Minnesota could end up winning this thing walking away is the fact that they are shooting themselves in the foot, you know, a couple of times a game with picks at the very least. And frankly, I'm counting on that for the Patriots to win the game on Sunday, that the Vikings will find a way to screw it up. Because it is a very talented football team, much like the Cowboys. It's a talented, underachieving football team that continues to self-inflict their wounds. And when they finally figure out a way to stop self-inflicting wounds, then you'll probably see the Vikings and or the Cowboys both start to win games in their conference. But it has to happen pretty quick. Otherwise, they can start kissing, you know, 2010 goodbye.
Yeah, my assessment, John, though, of what you just said, I think that it won't change for the Vikings until you have a change at quarterback and a change in coach. That's just my general opinion. I think those are the two things holding them back from being an elite team.
Well, I think Vikings fans probably feel the same way. I've kind of looked at some of their fan sites and a couple of their blogs this week just to get a sense for, you know, what fandom is saying about, you know, a 2-4 team. And, you know, first of all, they refer to Brad Childress as Chili. So, you know, they call him Chili, so I'm sure that's not exactly an endearing term around there. That could mean several things, I suppose. But they all think that, you know, Chili and his ability to, you know, instruct and play call is you know, that he's clueless in that regard. That his willingness to, you know, stick behind Favre is the first problem that, you know, the team has. And that even if you were to get rid of Favre, nobody likes Tavares Jackson, even though he's, you know, may have all the talent in the world, as we were talking about early in the program today. Nobody thinks he can execute worth a flip. And so if that's the case, then what kind of a future do you really have at quarterback for that team? Does Minnesota have to go out and find somebody else? And they've got a fundamental decision in which they've got to arrive at pretty quickly. And whether or not Childress is going to be a part of it or not, you know, in the coming years. I think that's all part of the discussion, you know, in terms of trying to bring, you know, the Vikings into focus. Let's take a couple of minutes now to, you know, we'll kind of keep the Vikings off here to the side out handy if we need to reach at them. But I also wanted to take some time to kind of gauge the temperature inside the AFC East as well. And Andy Kent, who was kind enough to visit with us earlier this season before the Patriots played the Dolphins, he writes for Dolphins.com, and he's also a AFC East blogger for AOLFanHouse.com, and he joined us now inside Patriots Playbook. Andy, how are you today?
Can't complain, John. This is about as perfect a weather as we can have down here, although I'd rather be out on the golf course instead of sitting in the dungeon of a media room right now.
Gee, thanks. Well, thanks for sitting in the dungeon of a media room with us. We appreciate it.
Oh, you gave me an excuse to step outside, so no, now I'm outside.
Okay. All right, beautiful. All right, at least you can enjoy it. It's rainy here today, so.
He's just using us, John.
Yeah, he's using us as an excuse. Yeah. That's okay. I don't mind being used, Andy. It's okay. We like that. Let's start then with the New England Patriots, just because, you know, right at the top of the heap at 5-1, along with the Jets, you've got two of the three best records in the NFL residing within this division. Are you at all surprised at that?
Not really. No, I mean, I think even coming into this season, all of us down here kind of felt that the pecking order was going to be like that. We figured it would be close. And, you know, if you take a look back at a controversial replay ruling, you might be looking at 2-5-1 teams and a 4-2 team in the AFC East. But no, I'm not surprised. I mean, with Tom Brady at quarterback and what you guys have on that offense, we knew that they were going to be fine. I think your young defense has improved over the course of the season in the last couple of games. And now that you got that balance going, they're sitting right where they want to be. And of course, the Jets, after the way they started against the Ravens, everybody was like, good. They've kind of been humbled after the Hard Knocks thing, but they're on a pretty good roll right now. And coming off the bye week, they don't look like they're slowing down any.
No, they don't. And to that end, I know that most people are not terribly surprised that the Jets have gotten into gear. I think we all realized before the season started that the Jets would probably be one of the favorites. Patriots, we weren't too terribly sure about. Dolphins, frankly, Andy, and I think we discussed this a few weeks ago, the Dolphins were actually my pick to win the division. So in light of the fact that they really kind of got jobbed by the Steelers on that touchdown, that phantom touchdown call for Ben Roethlisberger, what's the reaction been in South Florida concerning where the Dolphins are right now?
You know, it's strange because I think when you and I talked before the Patriots game about what they were looking at, they had a pretty tough early schedule that they were facing, and the feeling was if they could be 2-2 going into the bye week, be 4-4, maybe 5-3 at the midway point, that would be perfect for them because the second half of the schedule lights up a little bit. Well, they're 3-3, but nobody expects them to do it the way they did it, go 3-0 on the road and winless at home. So it's kind of, you know, messed up the pattern here a little bit. I mean, I think the feeling was they were going to win at Buffalo, probably lose to the Vikings, and then split with the Patriots and the Jets and probably have a tough time in Green Bay. And instead, they're playing lights out away from home. And two of the three games, they played well at home. The Patriots game, obviously, they just fell apart, especially on special teams, but they're, you know, nobody's ready to kind of give up. I mean, they're looking at this as a team that's playing the tough teams well and close. I mean, the Steelers were picked by many to be one of the best teams in the AFC going into that game, and they lost by a point. And really, as we've said, that field goal shouldn't have even taken place at the end. They should be 4-2. So they're picking it up. They're healthier now. Chad Henne is looking a lot more confident. The defense is still playing lights out. And so if they can go up to Cincinnati and Baltimore, I think they need to get out a run. They can't be winning and losing. They need to win like three or the next four and get a little winning streak going to feel better about themselves.
Back in week two, the Dolphins faced this same Minnesota Viking team that the Patriots are facing this weekend. They played them on the road up in Minneapolis, so a little bit different scenario here than what the Patriots are facing. But at the same time, though, Miami ended up winning it 14-10. What struck you about that Minnesota football team you faced that day? Did anything stand out?
Adrian Peterson stood out in that game for sure. They kind of hemmed him in pretty well in the first half. And then I think the Vikings and Childress realized, hey, you know what? This Dolphins pass defense is driving us nuts. They were getting pressure on Favre. They were sacking him. They were forcing him into rush throws. You know, we've got arguably the best running back in the league. Let's see what he can do. And Peterson still has it. He's done a lot better job protecting the ball, and he's hard to bring down. And so if he can keep running like he's running, he's going to drive a lot of defenses crazy. On the passing side, they didn't have Randy Moss then. They've got Moss now, but of course now you guys are going to be facing, if Favre plays, a guy on one good leg. And if he doesn't play, who knows what Tavares Jackson can do. So it's a totally different looking team coming into Gillette Stadium than the one the Dolphins saw in week two. And probably the other thing that struck me is defensively, Jared Allen has been kept rather quiet all year for being one of the elite pass rushers. Jake Long did a great job on him, and he hasn't really recovered from that.
Well, considering the hard time that the Patriots offensive line had this last weekend with San Diego, yeah. I certainly would expect a guy like Algie Crumpler to be kept on the field most of the time and to chip away at a guy like Allen to make sure he doesn't get off on the Patriots on Sunday.
Oh, yeah, that would not surprise me whatsoever because, like you said, they've got a really stout defensive line. They like to rush the passer. And Allen, with each week, is getting angrier and angrier at not being able to have his way like he had last year and the previous couple of years. So I'm sure they sat in the film room and said, oh, boy, this New England team is one that we could kind of, you know, get back on track with. So he should expect, like you said, if Bill Belichick knows what he's doing, which he does, a tight end to be chipping him and maybe a running back as well.
Hey, while we're on the subject of the Vikings, since we talked about them playing Miami back in week two, our question of the day to our fans here has been, if you could ask Brett Favre a question or tell him one thing, what would it be? Have you had a chance to interview him recently?
Actually, I have not because we did not get him on the conference call.
Okay.
I think the last time that I probably had a chance to talk to him was when he was with the Jets and they faced him twice, so we had to pick one of the two conference calls.
Right.
You notice, though, that he's very, very good at he's been doing this 20 years now, of answering the questions he wants to answer, and if it's a question he doesn't want to answer, he's not going to get anywhere near it. And obviously, I'm sure any question having to do with Jen Sturger and any of this NFL investigation thing, he's just totally stepping aside from.
Right. Well, if you could ask him a question today, what would it be?
You know, I would ask him to what extent is he willing to put his starting streak on the line. I mean, he's a tough guy, and he loves living the tough image. He doesn't need surgery on his ankle, but, is the ego and the record of keeping that streak going more important to him than maybe what's in the best interest of the team, having a fully healthy quarterback opposed to one that's on a gimpy leg?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I happen to think that that probably is something that a lot of people would like to ask, although we've had a couple of people just say, you know, why have you stuck around the game as long as you have? You know, and my answer to that all program long today has been because in order to compete at this level, you've got to have an oversized ego. And Favre's ego is clearly on steroids. It's his ego that has kept him from knowing when the right time is to step away.
Yeah, and that's why, I mean, that's the question I'd have asked him 2 years ago. But after what he's done the last 3 years, it's almost a question like there's no, not even any sense of me asking it now because I think he honestly, he doesn't know other than what you just said. I mean, he's probably not willing to come out and say it like, look, because, you know, this is what I've been doing for 20 years and I still think I can be the best quarterback in the league. I mean,
right.
he will say that, but and honestly, I think he's answered a couple of times. He thinks he feels like he's ready to retire and then he gets the itch again and he hasn't figured out a way to just kind of pick a side, you know, like other greats have had to do. I think John Elway, you know, I mean, as tough as it was for him to do, I think he knew the moment that Super Bowl 33 ended that this was it. He kind of said to himself, look, I can't end my career any better than this. Back-to-back Super Bowls, I'm done. And Favre, I honestly still believe this to this day. Had they not blown that NFC Championship game to the Giants, and he made, even if they didn't win the Super Bowl, he got the Packers back to the Super Bowl that year. I don't think he would have come back.
What about last year against New Orleans if they had beaten him?
You
think he would have stepped away?
I think he would have. I think he would have. I would have, especially even more so on that one than the Green Bay team because, I mean, you know, that was the picture-perfect scenario for him to have fed his ego. Look at this. I came back. I went to a new team, and you know, nobody's accused him of being, you know, the type of guy that says, oh, I always put team first. But in his mind, it would be like, look, I brought them back to the Super Bowl for the first time in, 30-some-odd years for the Vikings. I can't do any better than this, so right. I'm not coming. But he might have just told him right away, don't bother sending a plane to Mississippi. This is it. I'm done.
Yeah. Andy Kant from FanHouse.com joining us here on Patriots Playbook. Dolphins ended up getting a win over the Minnesota Vikings. Patriots are trying to get a win to see if they can improve to 6-1. How surprised are you at the way that the Patriots overall have arrived at 5-1 at this stage?
Probably the way I'm a little surprised at especially the last 2 weeks they've really had to fight hard to pull out a couple of tough wins. And I know that 2 weeks ago when the Dolphins were able to escape Green Bay with that overtime win, to get on the plane and hear that the Patriots are able to squeak out another win on their own, that deflated these guys a little bit because the Dolphins are trying to catch up to both of these teams. They're two games behind them and really two and a half in the division. So I'm surprised that even last week that they struggled like they did in San Diego. San Diego's a team in utter disarray. And, you know, they got a couple of bounces and fortunate breaks to go their way. So I think what's positive for Patriots fans to look at is they are, but the fact that they're 5-1 with a chance to go to 6-1, you know that Bill Belichick, Tom Brady, the veterans on this team are capable of saying, okay, you know, we made it through that first half of the schedule. We got a couple of lucky breaks our way. Now we need to put our foot on the gas pedal and run away with this thing. And they're more than capable of doing that.
Before I move on here, I mentioned obviously the Roethlisberger fumble that was called a touchdown and what have you. And I know that Tony Sperano and the Dolphins sent that film to the league office. Have you gotten any feedback or heard any feedback on that yet?
We actually just left his press conference. He said the league responded. And then he kind of left it at that. On Monday, he had said when he sent in the film, he doesn't expect any response any different than what he heard on the field, but he just wants it on record and hopes that maybe he might hear something different. So we asked him today, what did they say? And the typical Tony speak, he said, I'm long over that, fellas. I got Cincinnati this Sunday. So judging by the tone of his voice, obviously whatever they said, he didn't like. It was probably... Yeah. You know, it might have even been worse. I don't know if they got like a letter of apology admitting that they got it. I don't think they're going to admit that they got it wrong.
They did get it wrong.
Letter, what it was is after it was all said and done, what they had to do was proper procedure. What they got wrong, which I hopefully they did admit, was the head linesman should never have come in and signaled touchdown. And they've been told this ever since the Jay Cutler episode 2 years ago with San Diego and Ed Hockley ruled it incomplete and then
right.
You know, took away a fumble return, that from now on these type of plays, let the play out and make the call, as Chad Pennington explained, make the best call that's going to allow replay to get the right result. The best call in that instance would have been to call it a fumble, let the play out, just and then they would have been forced to determine who recovered it, which was Miami. And then the only thing to go back and review would have been, did he cross the line or did he not? And they would have seen that he didn't. But because the linesman came in and said touchdown, that kill, the play was dead from that point on, which meant, as Mike Pereira explained, no matter what happened in the pile, no matter the fact that a back judge said white ball, none of that mattered. Now they had to go back and see if there was clear video evidence that Miami recovered it, and they couldn't see that on the replay, which was a total unfortunate ending for the Dolphins.
Yeah, very, very, very true about that. I kind of felt they got jobbed, too. That was my first impression, and usually first impressions are good impressions no matter what it is that you're trying to do. Miami has Cincinnati this week, and so I know it's probably an important game for both sides because Cincinnati has to be thrown into that mix of teams that have disappointed, I think, a little bit over on the NFL. If you consider the Vikings one of those teams, certainly the Dallas Cowboys one of those teams, from an AFC perspective, I think Cincinnati would probably have to be one of those teams.
No, without a doubt. I mean, they're 2-4. You know, they won the division last year and supposedly only got better by adding T.O. to the mix. And now Carson Palmer has two, you know, elite caliber receivers to throw the ball to. And this young kid, Jordan Shipley, is open to my eyes. So, I mean, it's, at least offensively, they're not hurting there. I mean, they're throwing the ball and they're completing big passes. Their defense has just been giving up big play after big play and points after more points after more points. I mean, they lost 39-32 last week. And, you know, Marvin Lewis was, you know, I mean, his strength, you know, leaving Baltimore and coming in to coach the Bengals with defense. And defense has let them down right now. And it's going to be a huge aspect this Sunday because the Dolphins defense, like, is playing very well. They held the Steelers to legitimately 20 points, not 23, shut down one of the top rushing attacks. And got to Roethlisberger quite a bit. And Cincinnati's offensive line is not as stout as what Pittsburgh was showing. So if they're having trouble scoring points and Miami's offense can finally get off the skids, then everything should play in the favor for the Dolphins. Plus the fact that clearly they feel a lot more comfortable playing on the road so far. They haven't lost away from home. So
yeah,
they got a lot of things rolling in their favor right now.
Sure. Let me also touch briefly on the Jets and the Bills within the division while I got a moment here. Darrell Revis, the hamstring report, what is it this week? And do you expect to see him, anybody expect to see him on the field at the Meadowlands against the Packers?
Yeah, he'll be on the field. He came out Monday, said the bye week was exactly what he needed. You know, it was Ryan gave the team, the rest of the team, the entire bye week off to go do what they wanted. Revis stayed at their training facility in Florham Park, New Jersey, and just continued to rehab and get treatment. And on Monday, he said the hamstring is 100%. Basically, in his words, which hopefully if everybody follows and takes his word, it's the last we'll be talking about it all year, because it was kind of getting tiresome for me to have to, I basically could have named my blog the hamstring report for a week. He claims that nobody needs to ask him about it anymore. It's 100%. He's 100%. So unless he does something to it again and creates a whole new injury, he should be back to, in his mind, the Darrell Revis that was dominating the league last year. But the flip side of that is Antonio Cromartie has been playing lights out over there. So I'm what's curious to see with Rex Ryan is if he believes Revis is 100%, does he shake up the chemistry and shake up what's been working and put him back on the opposing team's number one receiver? Or does he say, you know what, Cromartie's holding his own out there, why don't we put you on the slot guy? And then now we have, you know, we can take care of two things instead of one.
Right. Makes sense to me. And then, you know, where the Buffalo Bills are concerned, I realize they're 0-6, but there's a part of me that really felt bad for them in that game against Baltimore this past Sunday. You think anybody else shares that sentiment?
Bills fans. And Jan Kelly.
They actually have fans, Andy?
I thought they were all in Toronto. That's why they're playing some home games in Toronto, I guess, and they almost, I think they suffered or either came close to or did have one of their most recent home games blacked out against Jacksonville, I believe. Yeah. So they're, you know, the fans are kind of losing faith, but the fact is, you know, they've been looking a lot better on offense with Ryan Fitzpatrick. I mean, he had a great game again last week, and he's been throwing for 300-plus yards, even against the Patriots. I mean, until those two late interceptions, he was, you know, I mean, he got the offense clicking and going, and they got their, you know, Fred Jackson and C.J. Spiller playing well. They just got it. It's what this reminds me of a lot is the Dolphins team I covered my first year here in 07, the one that went 1-15. And they opened the season with a game like Buffalo did against Miami that was close, nip and tuck to the end, that they could have won. The Dolphins lost in overtime to the Washington Redskins, and then just it's just snowballed. They kept losing games by a field goal or 6 points or 5 points, and the next thing you know, they looked up at the schedule, and they were 0-8, 0-9, 0-10. That's what's happened to this team. I mean, the Jacksonville game, they were ahead, and they blew it at the end. They gave them a whole, like, 30 unanswered points. They did it to the Ravens. And now it's got to creep into the locker room. Look, we just can't win. Even if we get a 35-0 lead, the team's probably going to come back on us and beat us 36-35. And you know, I don't know what Chan Gailey's going to have to do to turn it around, but it's going to be tough. It's going to be tough this week, and it's going to be tough every week from now on for them.
Do you still get the sense that the Bills will be willing to give Gailey a lot of time, a year, two years, even three?
Yeah, I think with Ralph Wilson, you know, and I don't know how much, you know, I mean, the guy's still running the team. And I think he came out with the message of we've tried the previous 4 or 5 years of, you know, quick fixing. They gave Dick Geron actually maybe a little more time than people thought they would. I think now they're committed to, look, we're just going to have to tear this thing down and start from square one and give somebody a chance to establish some sort of continuity. And that's what they did here with the Dolphins. I mean, you know, Parcells, they basically tore everything down, and it's like they had a four-year plan, and let's see if we can establish a foundation that by the end of 4 years, everything's back on the right track, and they're setting themselves up for a nice, you know, 6, 7, 8 year run of playoff contention. And I think that's why they're not going to want to just can Gailey and say, let's start over again.
Yeah, this Sunday, Buffalo is at Kansas City, and of course, in the rest of the division, Miami at Cincinnati, as we talked about. Green Bay is going to the new Meadowlands to take on the Jets, in addition to the Vikings being here at Gillette to take on the New England Patriots. Andy Kent from fanhouse.com, also dolphins.com. Andy, thanks again for a little time. We sure appreciate it, and we'll look forward to doing this again soon.
Yeah, I look forward to it. Anytime I can step outside here. Now I got to go back into that dungeon. Thanks, guys.
Sorry. You got it. Thanks, Andy. Appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
You got it. Andy Kent, again, from fanhouse.com. He's the AFC East blogger, and I'm sure we'll talk to him as well before we get the Dolphins again a little bit later on in the season. Let's wrap up today with a couple of emails that have been sent in today that we were able to get. This one comes from Andrew in Utah, who says, great show today, guys. Hey, with all this talk about the Patriots' possible record, I'm just curious, do you think that they could win their division still? And along those lines, what record do you think the Jets will end up with? Well, yeah, I certainly think that the Patriots can win the division as long as they keep doing what they're doing right now, which is winning and still perhaps somewhat surprising us along the way. But then again, I think this team, and I think Eric Scalavino from PFW will probably concur here, this team is still of a fragile nature because the defense is still evolving. And it may be in a constant state of evolution throughout the season. We know that they've gotten younger. We know that they've, you know, gotten certainly a little bit faster at key positions defensively, but that also means that they've also gotten less experience. And so when you go up against the savvier receivers in the NFL and the big tough backs, and this is why Minnesota just does not work out right now to be a great matchup for the Patriots. You got Moss to take you deep, you got Harvin to burn speed, and you got Peterson to pound away at you from the running back slot. I mean, goodness gracious. It's, you know, I'm not sure why we even think right now when you just look at it, you know, without considering what the records are, you'd have to say Minnesota's favored to win the game. But they're finding ways to win. And similar to what we saw at the tail end of the 2001 season, when this team started to put this dynasty together, they just found ways to win. It wasn't always spectacular. It wasn't always impressive, but they just managed to do whatever it took to have, you know, one more point on the scoreboard than the other guy. And so I get the sense that maybe the way this team is beginning to redevelop and reform itself. And so, yeah, they can do that. And if the Patriots actually won this division, let's just say best-case scenario. And in my estimation, best-case scenario right now is 12-4, which would mean they've got to go 7-3 over the last 10 games, and I think that's a reasonable assumption. It's not out of the question. But if they go 12-4, depending upon who those three losses are to, then if the Jets are at least 12-4, which they could very well be, and they're also 5-1 now, keep in mind, that my guess would be the Jets would be right there with them record-wise. Even if the Patriots win the rematch on December the 6th, my guess would be that the Jets' record will probably not be far off from that. I can't see the Jets any worse than 11-5 based on what they've done thus far. I really can't. I think the smart money right now would still have the Jets as the division champion, the Patriots potentially as the wild card. That doesn't mean things can't change, though. Let's see what else we got here. We have Mike sends this one, and he says, question, oh, here you go. Do you think Brett Favre will suffer from the Al Bundy syndrome after he finally walks away from the game? Married with children syndrome. I'm not entirely certain about that. And which syndrome are we referring to? Because I think he was actually a victim to several of them. So a little explanation, additional explanation is needed there. Mike in Erie, Pennsylvania says, I think Randy Moss should dress up as a New England Patriot on Sunday night. He might even find a jersey with his name on it. That would be unusual if he actually came out in a Patriots jersey and head over to the other sideline. If he really wanted to make a name for himself and endear himself, and he's already, I think, endeared himself to Patriots fans for, you know, his play here over 3 years. I don't think anybody has any problems with the way Randy Moss played. And really, in a lot of instances, even the effort that he gave, you could make an argument that sometimes the effort was less than 100% based on what we've seen or what we were told by some other observers of the game. But I don't think anybody largely has any problems with the way Moss played. It's disappointing that 07 didn't turn out to be that championship year for all of us, much less for Randy Moss. I think the Giants were just predestined, whatever. But no, I don't think anybody has any problems with Randy. It would be kind of funny to see that. And I do expect hundreds, if not thousands, of Moss masks for Halloween Sunday in the stands at Gillette here on Sunday. And I'm sure that will be a lot of fun, not only for the folks who come to the game, but Undoubtedly for the people who will watch this game on television. It'll be a Fox telecast on Sunday. Don't forget, coming up here, we've got Shop Talk on Patriots.com radio to get you into. Talk to you about all the stuff that's going on at the Patriots Pro Shop and some of the deals that you can't get as the holiday shopping season is quickly becoming upon us. Shocking to even think that. But Shop Talk coming up here in a couple of moments. Our thanks again to Andy Kent from AOLFanHouse.com for joining us. For Paul Allen, the radio voice of the Minnesota Vikings, for joining us in the playbook today. And certainly PFW's Eric Scalavino. We'll do it with him again tomorrow, as will we do it again with Russell Baxter, NFL Research Coordinator for ESPN and the family of networks. He'll join us as he normally does on Thursdays right here inside Patriots Playbook. Thanks to Kevin Collins for throwing it all together as well. It's a good job done today. And thanks for listening into the program. We'll be back tomorrow for more of the Patriots and the Vikings getting set for Brett Favre and Randy Moss to head back to Gillette Stadium on Sunday, 4:15 Eastern Time kickoff. Don't forget it's a late kickoff coming up on Sunday. And we'll get into that more so tomorrow inside the playbook.
Tuesday through Thursday, hear from NFL experts on Patriots Playbook.
I'm pleased to be joined on the program now by Jim Nance from CBS Sports, the senior editor for NFL.com. Vic Carucci, welcome on the program. Ron Jaworski, Phil Simms from CBS, joining us here inside the playbook. Kenny Albert, who of course calls the play-by-play for the Fox Television Network.
All right, we're pleased to be joined now by Dan Dierdorf, CBS analyst.
Randy Cross joins us here inside the playbook.
Patriots Playbook with John Rook, Tuesday through Thursday at 2 on American Airlines Patriots.com. Radio.